Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Okay, well, this idea of karma, you know, it's present in nearly every world religion in some form or another, no matter what you call it, cause and effect, actions and consequences, what goes around comes around, you reap what you sow. No matter what you kind of describe it as, I guess you've got to look at both sides of the equation. If it is true, if there is such a law, well, I guess there's a good side to it. You know, if you do good things should come back to you. But what about the flip side? What about the bad side? If all of the bad things you do have negative consequences, can you ever escape that? Mark Herringshaw is a pastor and an author. He's written this book called The Karma of Jesus. Pretty provocative title. He's with us on the line now. Mark, welcome to Open House.
Hey, great to be with you, Sheridan.
You've presented this book in the form of kind of a long, rambling conversation with somebody who interrupted your sermon in church one day. It got you thinking about the whole idea of karma. Just recount that experience and then how it got you thinking about this notion.
Well, it happened a couple of years ago. I'm a rather, unassuming, typical American Christian pastor, and I'm speaking in my church one day, and about five rows back in our crowd, a young man, probably in his early 20s, spoke up and began to fire questions at me right in the middle of my presentation. And so at first I began to kind of deflect a little bit, and I answered those as they came. But he interrupted me about three times. And finally, I said, you know, you're asking some pretty good questions. Why don't you come up afterwards? This may not be the best setting for us to talk, so come on up afterwards and we'll discuss this. And so he did. He came up and began to pour out his story to me. And he'd grown up in a Christian church. While he was in high school, he became addicted to drugs and had recently completed a drug treatment program. And while he was going through that program, had really been introduced to some new ideas in the form of New Age thought and Eastern philosophy. And in his mind, it had really helped him. He'd really come through his addictions and really felt like he was coming through the other side. So he's actually processing out loud what it is that he really believed. Mm. And so we talked for quite a while, and that's when the topic of karma and cause and effect, which he had really converted to believe as his fundamental worldview, that's when that came to the forefront, and how we were able to discuss faith based on that perspective.
Because it would make sense to him, wouldn't it? He was an addict, and he was robbing homes or whatever, or stealing to support his habit. And then he stopped his habit. He started doing good things, and he started getting a job. And of course, his life started to turn around.
That's exactly right. And he was seeing this immediate correlation: doing good things come back. When he was doing destructive things to himself and others, he was getting negative rewards. So it was a natural way to begin to talk with him and hear about his life.
Let's talk about this idea of karma and where it came from. What is the history of karma?
Well, I would agree with your introduction, Sheridan. That really is something that's embedded in almost every worldview. I mean, it's pretty natural for us to see that there's a natural correspondence with the things that we do. And that's carried over philosophically and in religious systems, and really came to light in an articulate way in the Indo-European cultures. It was also coming about the same time, around 500 BC, in some of the work of the Greek philosophers. So both in India and in Greece, you had this rise of this understanding of kind of an automatic reward system. The universe is kind of an echo chamber, that what goes out always comes back. And that's come down to us through both the influences in our Western cultures from the East as well as from Greek thought.
Now, in the book, you also talk about how you can kind of see some karma-like thoughts in the Bible, too.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we have in the Christian scriptures and in the Old Testament Jewish scriptures, we have concepts where Jesus says, for instance, you reap what you sow. Certainly the book of Proverbs talks a lot about, you know, the good are rewarded and the evil are punished. So there's these reciprocating concepts. The difference, of course, with the Christian and Jewish view is that there's a person behind that automatic action, that, that Christians and Jews believe in a personal God, and some of the other systems see that the universe itself is sovereign. It's a kind of automatic machine that rewards and punishes.
Yes. Mark Herringshaw is with us, the author of The Karma of Jesus. We're talking about this notion of karma. You reap what you sow, cause and effect, all of those kinds of things. If you've got a thought to throw into the conversation, 1-300-40-2020 is my number. Let's talk about the pros and cons of this idea of karma. Of course, the pro is if you do good, you get good back. And of course, we see that in so much of the popular New Age literature, whether it be Rhonda Byrne's book, The Secret, much about, you know, sending out positive thoughts, and of course you're going to get those positive things manifested in your life. Eckhart Tolle's books about a new earth or the power of now, so many Deepak Chopra's books, etc. You can see naturally there would be some sort of winsome idea there. You know, you do good, you're going to get good back. Let's look at the flip side, though, about what the problems of the concept actually are when, you know, we do bad things.
Yeah, what's fascinating is that a lot of these contemporary expressions of the idea really are quite optimistic, and you don't necessarily see that optimism in the ancient thoughts about the concept of karma. In the original Buddhist and Hindu literature, for instance, karma is not seen as a positive opportunity. It's seen as a kind of burden that grows out of human action.
And I
have a great deal of respect for those ancient documents, even though I don't share the solution that they have arrived at. They, I believe, are really diagnosing the human condition, that there really is a kind of helplessness in getting out of the effects of our actions, because they believe, and I believe it's also truly expressed in Scripture, that human action always creates more negative consequences than positive ones. And the more we try to work our way out, the more even unintentional problems we cause for which we're liable. And I think that's really the trap. What the Bible calls sin is not just my own personal effects, but the accumulative effect of the case of just being a human being and tied into all the negative consequences of all the negative actions.
I think about my mother, who has numerous chronic illnesses, and I kind of think, wow, in the worldview of karma, she's done some pretty bad things. And of course, if you want to take the idea back to its original source, she could well have been doing those things in previous lifetimes as well.
Right.
Yeah, so it can be a little bit simplistic too. I mean, the fact is that we may do some bad things, even though we intended to do good.
Yes.
What goes on there?
Yeah, I think, and that's when there's no person behind it all to judge and discriminate, then it's really only an outcome-based process. There's an amazing story of the beginning of World War One, for instance. The chauffeur who's driving Archduke Ferdinand in Sarajevo takes a wrong turn down a street, and the result of that was the Archduke was assassinated. The result of that was the beginning of World War One. All the nations who were allied together were sort of forced into that conflict. And from World War One, you've got the Great Depression, you have the Russian Revolution, eventually the Second World War, the Cold War, and the whole drama of the horrible drama of the 20th century. And yet, it was all really begun by a guy who can't read directions, and he takes a wrong turn. And in a world that sees consequences tied to their actions, you'd have to make that man liable, at least in part, for everything that followed.
Yeah.
So all of us have had things in our lives that have not gone the way we'd want them to. And even when our intentions are good, there can be negative results. And if we hold to this principle of karma, then we're liable for actions we didn't even intend.
Now, let's talk about some of the ways then, if we actually hold to a karmic worldview, a karmic way of the world kind of paying us back for the good or the bad that we actually do. I mean, what kind of strategies then do we typically use to try and fix the problem?
Yeah, I mean, human beings are pretty ingenious at trying to dig our way out of issues, and of course there's the strategies that that religious systems bring into the mix, where we attempt to use works and efforts and religious rituals, and in one form or another, most of the world's religions are trying to find ways to mediate this law of consequences. Then, of course, there's just the effort of attempting to work good luck in our favor Superstition is another way that human beings try to mediate this issue. But in the end, it really never works. The math never fully balances. And there's very few people, I think, at the end of their life that would feel perfectly confident that they've balanced the equation, that they've done enough good to balance potentially the effects of the things in their lives. And therein is the real problem, and therein is where you have an opening of what Jesus brings into the equation.
This is Open House across the nation. You can listen to us on the podcast too, theopenhouse.net.au. The Karma of Jesus is the name of Mark Hernshaw's book. He's an author and pastor, and yeah, that takes us nicely to this idea, the Karma of Jesus, quite a provocative title that you've used to bring in Jesus into this whole idea of the karma concept. Take me further then. Let's talk about then what Jesus has to offer to this karma idea.
Well, in this conversation that I had with this young man, as we were talking about our own lives, and he was sharing his stories, and I was sharing some of mine, we really came to a mutual understanding. And I think we both agreed that we had done things in our lives that we regretted. We'd done things that we couldn't completely control the net result. And so we were in a place, really, of uncertainty. And so that's when, in the conversation, I just asked him, I said, what would happen if someone lived a life that had perfect consequences? They made perfect choices, just hypothetically, if they made perfect choices and had perfect consequences, what would their karmic formula be? And he said, well, you know, I guess they'd have perfect karma. And that's when I said, well, Christians, from our worldview, believe that there was a person who made perfect choices, and that was Jesus of Nazareth. And he lived his life in such a way, expressing love in such a way, that the consequences of his life were entirely for the benefit of other people, that he lived out of that perfect ethic of love. And as a result of that, he chose to take that love so far as to trade places with us, to trade destinies with us. And in the Bible, there's a concept called covenant, which allows for one individual to take on the identity of another and to live that on their behalf. It's something hoped for in most world religions. There's hints of this in both Buddhism and Hinduism, as well as in ancient Greek thought, that there would one day be a way for the destinies to be exchanged with someone. Mm. But in Christianity, we have that actually fulfilled in history. That's what Christians believe in. And Jesus, in his choosing to die, chooses to take into himself our consequences, and then he gives us his consequences. The way I like to describe it is that Jesus becomes the toxic waste dump of the universe. I dump all the garbage of my life, and he gives me all of his goodness. It's that exchange.
That's beautiful. I love the way you've actually put that, Mark. That's so, so beautiful. I mean, when Jesus died on that cross, he wasn't actually dying for his own consequences, you know, his own karma. He was that perfect person. And yes, then there's that offer that then if we buy into what he did, if we actually say, yes, okay, somehow you are paying for my karma, you are paying for my bad deeds, my bad decisions, all of my sins, then he actually then gives us our forgiveness, he gives us our brand new lives, he gives us everything that he actually achieved. It's a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah, and in the book I tell a story of, actually it wasn't all that long ago, it was after, years after I had already made a decision to follow Jesus, but my wife and I were going through a very difficult time in our marriage. I had gone through a graduate study program, a PhD program that I really wanted to do, and the net side of the other part was that she was really reluctant. We had four children, and yet I really pushed and lobbied her to allow me to do this. And anyway, the end of this, after the program was over and I had the letters after my name, there was a real chasm in our relationship of distrust. And I had really broken trust in our marriage as a result of this. In a way, I had made my own study, my own achievement, more important than our mutual trust with each other, and we didn't really know how to fix this. We actually had gone to a counselor, and we'd identified what the problem was, but there was that chasm between us, and the break really happened when we were attending a retreat for married couples, and in this retreat, the man was leading us to identify where the hurts and the unforgiveness and the brokenness in our lives and in our marriages, where that stood. And at one moment, he actually had us, he handed a crucifix to each couple. Mm-hmm. And in my tradition, my Protestant tradition, we don't usually use a crucifix, but we did in this case, and we held on to that. And he prayed and asked God to pour into that figurative picture of Jesus all of the wounds and the hurts and the unforgiveness that we held. And as we held on to that, it was a powerful healing moment for us, where we saw that Jesus became the one who carried that for us, and out came all of our hurts and wounds and unforgiveness, and we got in return what he gave to us. So that's actually one of the places in my life, and I think my wife would say the same thing, where we've seen this in action, where he took my consequences and he gave me his. It's not fair. It doesn't make perfect logical sense, except that he loves me.
Yeah.
And he loves us, and he's offering this as a free gift.
Yeah, I mean, that's a beautiful story, and I think that's also raised this issue of fairness, that this is actually not a fair system on God's behalf, really, is it? Because it kind of plays with our ideas of what the nature and character and personality of God is like, because if God is definitely an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth kind of God, is that everything that we do, we will pay exactly the same amount for at some stage. And certainly there are ideas in the Bible that actually suggest, yes, there will be a reckoning. I mean, we will actually stand before the judgment seat of Christ. We will have to answer for those things. But here is the offer that everything that we have done, actually the payment was taken by God himself in the flesh in the form of Jesus. And there's this notion of grace, this we are getting what we do not deserve. It kind of cuts right against
That's
karma,
exactly,
doesn't it?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's actually one thing that I deeply respect about my Buddhist friends. And as in my dialogue with them, and obviously with a book like this, I've had opportunity to open up some amazing conversations across faith traditions. And the one thing I really appreciate about the Buddhist tradition in particular is there's a real honest assessment of the cost of our actions. And I think they arrive at very much the same place of diagnosing the problem. There really is no hope long-term in us, any of us, trying to dig our way out of our problem. And in the end, their solution is come back for another try, another round at the practice of life. And you keep moving in that cycle until maybe eventually you can work your way out of that cycle. And the Christian solution, of course, is that Jesus interrupts that cycle. He steps in on our behalf. And it's not fair. It's not compensation as it should be. He's, in essence, paying the price for us. So when we have conversations, when I have conversations with, particularly with those who hold that particular philosophy, I can agree with them up to the point of identifying what the problem is, but the Christians offer a different solution to that, which is one of love, one that someone else steps in love and pays my price.
We've spoken kind of very theologically and kind of theoretically in many ways. You've given us a practical example of how this idea has actually changed your marriage. For somebody right now that's wrestling with their own consequences, whatever they've done, it might be a drug addiction or it might be the abuse of somebody in their family or whatever it might be. It might be just simply that saying, hey, you know, a whole bunch of stuff is happening for me. Maybe it is actually karma. Bring this down practically. What does this mean for the person who's wrestling now?
Yeah, I'll just do that by sharing briefly another story out of my life, an encounter I had when I was a teenager. I think I was 13 years old, and I was riding the bus back and forth to school, and there was a young girl who was also riding the bus, and she had a physical handicap. And in my family, I mean, every family has their dysfunctions, and my family, one of the ways we dealt with being uncomfortable in a situation is we just joked and teased and kind of pushed off that discomfort by sort of a kind of a coarse jesting sort of a behavior. Anyway, to this poor girl who was suffering from that handicap, as a 13-year-old, I wasn't mature enough to really process that, so I began to tease her. And that teasing at some point crossed the line, and it became really a kind of abuse to her. And even though I didn't realize this at the time, I was really wounding who she was. And at one point, her parents stepped in, took her off the bus, I mean, you know, removed her from riding the bus, and they removed her from our school. And that's the last I ever saw of her. And at one point in my life, actually, after I was an adult, I think there are times when God takes us back on journeys into our life, and we see things. We see things that we might have overlooked. And there was a time when I believe that's exactly what God did, is he showed me what had happened and how I played a chapter. I played a part in this girl's life. And she's my age, and she's out there in the world somewhere. And she's still hearing voices in her head, as we all do. And she's hearing my words. They're still echoing around in her. And I'm partly responsible for the state of her life. And as I look at that, and I can name how many other people that I've hurt in such ways down through my life. Some of it really unintentional, but because of the way things work, the way things are tied together, I'm a part of the equation of those people's lives. And what I had to do at some point, and I did, I had to seek forgiveness for my involvement in that activity. I had to go to God and say, you know, if you judge me fairly on this, I'm in deep trouble. Because this person may have grown up to be a child abuser or who knows what. And I have no way of ever fixing that. There's no way I can ever go back and undo that. So at a point of real brokenness and inability to act on my own, I came to God in Jesus, and I said, I'm helpless. And based on what the scriptures tell me about Jesus, when I approach him in that attitude, if I admit, you know, here's the problem, and I'm helpless to fix it, but I ask you to take this in my place. Based on that, that exchange happens, and it's really quite simple. It's really just a matter of saying, God, I can't, but I know you can in Jesus, so please do. Please make that exchange for me. And what I believe happens in the kind of the cosmic picture of the universe is that as Jesus takes my place and he takes the blame for, in terms of the whole cosmic order, in terms of the karmic arithmetic, he now is named as the plaintiff in the argument. And I, instead, am let off. Free. So in terms of when God looks at that circumstance, he no longer sees me as liable, which is just absolutely amazing to me. And what I'd say to anybody out there, whatever it is you're struggling with, at the end of the day, none of us can pay the bill. The bill's more than, we're all bankrupt at some point. But once we'll admit that, throw our hands up and say, you know, God, I'm bankrupt in terms of fixing the mess I've caused of things. At that point, we're ready to take the deal to him, and he'll make it. It's really very, very simple. It's not complicated. It doesn't take a long time. It's just, God, I can't fix this, but I believe you can. Please do.
That's it. Mark, it's been great talking to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Sheridan, this has been great. God bless you and all your listeners.
Yeah, you too. Mark Herringshaw there, author of The Karma of Jesus.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.